Via remote, this is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. U.S. President Donald Trump said the number of COVID-19 cases was spiking across the country, and in his words, it will probably and unfortunately get worse before it gets better. Trump said some areas of our country are doing very well, while others are doing less well. The president also made his strongest statement yet Tuesday regarding wearing facial coverings, saying whether you like the mask or not, they have an impact. Meantime, Joe Biden, the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee, laid out his economic plan for the country during a speech in his home state of Delaware Tuesday. He blamed President Trump for failing to lead during the coronavirus pandemic. With more than 14.8 million confirmed cases and more than 613,000 fatalities, here in the U.S., researchers are reporting progress on the race to develop a safe and effective vaccine against the disease. Staying here in the U.S., police in the city of Chicago say 14 people were injured, one person being questioned, additional suspects being sought after gunfire erupted outside of a funeral home on the city's south side, where at least one police squad car was present. Police say shots came from a passing SUV. Police officials said several targets of the shooting returned fire. The shooting comes as Chicago's mayor, Lori Lightfoot, announced the city intends to cooperate with law enforcement agents President Trump is sending there, this according to the Chicago Tribune. Trump plans come after federal agents in Portland, Oregon, sparked opposition among these city officials because of federal agents on the city's streets. President reportedly considering sending about 150 agents to Chicago, where the crime has spiked. Via remote, this is VOA News. About 2,000 Israelis rally outside Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's home in Jerusalem Tuesday, protesting his handling of the coronavirus crisis and alleged corruption. The demonstrators marched from Netanyahu's official residence to Israel's parliament, calling on the five-term premier to step down. Israel has reimposed some restrictions after a rise in coronavirus cases that has prompted protests by Israelis calling for better, faster, simpler state aid. A partial lockdown designed to control the spread of the virus was lifted in May. Israel has reported more than 50,000 coronavirus cases and 422 deaths. Meanwhile, Netanyahu went on trial in May for bribery, fraud, and breach of trust. He denies any wrongdoing. Two Chinese nationals working with Chinese security services have been charged with hacking hundreds of entities around the world, including the U.S. biotech companies developing COVID-19 vaccines. Suspects were charged in an 11-count indictment unsealed in the Eastern District of Washington State. This marks the first time U.S. prosecutors have indicted Chinese hackers for what they term the blended threat of working for Chinese state while also the victims targeting victims for personal gains. The indictment says, in addition to attacking businesses, the hackers infiltrated the online accounts of Chinese dissidents, clergy, and rights activists, and provided their personal information to the Chinese government. Former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir went on trial in Khartoum for staging the coup that brought him to power in 1989. The former president, who was ousted from power by the military in April of 2019 after mass protests across the country against his rule, faces the death penalty if convicted. The 76-year-old Bashir was indicted years ago by the International Criminal Court in The Hague for alleged war crimes, genocide, and crimes against humanity committed in the Darfur region. Sudanese officials had said they would hand over al-Bashir to the ICC, but have yet to do so. Sudan's transitional government has launched several reforms with the hope of regaining acceptance among the international community. And Brazil testing volunteers with an experimental COVID-19 vaccine developed by China's Sinovac biopharmaceutical company. The Sao Paulo state government announced 12 research centers in six Brazilian states will perform thousands of tests over the next 3 months. Officials say the tests, if successful, will be made available to the public for free. For more news, please join us at voanews.com via remote. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, July 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni eases some COVID-19 restrictions.
We have now decided, on the advice of the scientists, that we can open some of the arcades, provided they have the following: temperature guns, social distancing, no people in the corridors. Everybody who buys there must be recorded.
Egypt's parliament authorizes military intervention in Libya. Illegal drugs find a way around coronavirus restrictions in Africa. Human rights groups criticize the Zimbabwe government for arresting a journalist and an opposition leader. A Malawi court sentences wildlife traffickers to 56 years in jail. And Kenyan health workers criticize their government for hiring more Cuban doctors.
We have now decided, on the advice of the scientists, that we can open some of the arcades, provided they have the following: temperature guns, social distancing, no people in the corridors. Everybody who buys there must be recorded.
And the environmental problems caused by the illicit trafficking of trees known as rosewood in some West African countries. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni Tuesday night announced the easing of some COVID-19 restrictions, including opening up of salons and boda boda's transport. On the other hand, President Museveni said his government will not rush to reopen the entire economy at the expense of people's health. Mugumi Davis Rakaringi reports from Kampala.
President Museveni started his speech by relaying stories from other countries, including the U.S., Iran, South Africa, and Brazil that have been hard hit by the coronavirus disease. He said the decision to open up the economy as well as social structures will be guided by scientific evidence.
Any activity can take place provided it can be done safely. That's the issue. It's not anything dangerous. Only that we don't want you to kill our people because you are looking for money. Money, 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 money. At the beginning, we said, please, all these things are important. Money is important, business is important, but life is number one.
Uganda has registered 1,072 cases of COVID-19, out of which at least 900 have since recovered from the disease. President Museveni announced arcades and shopping malls will be opened with immediate effect as long as they are guided by standard operating procedures such as having hand thermometers, sanitizers, hand washing facilities, and abide by social distance at the places of work.
We have now decided, on the advice of the scientists, that we can open some of the arcades, not all, provided they have the following: temperature guns, social distancing, no traders, no people in the corridors, no traders on the verandas. They must also keep records. Everybody who buys there must be recorded.
Also allowed to operate are taxi motors, local known as boda bodas, that be allowed to carry passengers beginning with Monday next week.
We are also going to open the saloons, provided they ensure masks for everybody and face shields for the operators. Then there will be temperature guns to check the temperature of everybody who comes in.
Curfew hours will be extended from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. But places of worship, as well as schools, will not be opened. And so are the airports and cross borders. Mr. Museveni said the government is working on providing radios students to facilitate them with distance learning. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The Kenyan Medical Practitioners, Pharmacists, and Dentists Union has faulted the Kenyan government's move to hire more Cuban doctors. The government says the foreign doctors who arrived in the country over the weekend are specialists to help address the shortage of doctors in Kenya. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the union says the government's decision has left many local doctors jobless.
The Kenyan government has been in disagreement with the Kenya Medical Practitioners, Pharmacists and Dentists Union demands that have led to them opting to hire doctors from Cuba, a move the union is opposing. Speaking in Nairobi yesterday, Tuesday, the union's acting secretary general Chibanze Mwachonda criticized the government for employing 20 more doctors from Cuba who came into the country over the weekend and leaving more than 1,000 Kenyan doctors
Inasmuch as they are saying it's meant to build capacity, that move is in bad taste. You cannot explain in whatever way how you leave your own people, your own citizens, trained by taxpayers' money, trained by Kenyans, out of employment, and bring foreigners when we have not exhausted our own pool of healthcare workers.
The union proposes that the government should at least hire 50 new doctors for each of the 47 counties in Kenya. Mr. Machonda said that with the increased cases of COVID-19 and health workers contracting the virus, there is need to hire more doctors locally.
We have done projections before on the human resource requirement for healthcare workers. We know the focus has been on isolation, bed capacity, but the HR component has not been given the priority that it deserves. We have seen 20 Cuban doctors who are said to be specialists being brought on board. The irony is that it has taken more than 4 months for the government to engage its own local doctors to combat COVID-19.
The government struck a deal to have another batch of Cuban doctors who will work for a period of 6 months after 100 came into the country 2 years ago. Defending the government's move, Health Cabinet Secretary Mutahi Kagwe said that the specialized doctors will go a long way in helping Kenyan doctors manage the COVID-19 spread.
On the matter of the Cuban doctors, the Cuban doctors are being paid like our own doctors. We are not paying any more than we pay our own people, and I would like that very clearly done. It is a small brigade of 20 doctors who have come, specialists in their own area, and their purpose really is just to come and exchange skills with our own doctors. And yes, we are continuing to hire doctors as the situation evolves. We are short of doctors in the ministry, and we are looking at how to increase capacity.
In the year 2018, the Kenyan government received 100 doctors from Cuba, 47 specialists and 53 family physicians who were flown in to address the shortage of doctors in the country that has been experienced for many years. However, security threats have been a concern to most doctors who were deployed to the northern part of the country after Al-Shabaab militia group abducted 2 doctors from Cuba in Mandera on April 12, 2019. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Authorities say Africa's activity as a global illicit drug hub continues, even as many of the continent's biggest economies have imposed restrictions on movement to stop the spread of coronavirus. American drug enforcement officials say they are especially concerned about what appears to be the rising incidence of drug use on the continent. Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Coronavirus lockdowns across Africa have seriously battered formal economies, with economic giant Nigeria losing an estimated $18 billion during its 5-week lockdown from March to April, according to data from the International Food Policy Research Institute. But still, says a top American anti-drug official, drugs and other illegal goods are still finding a way through both the continent and to consumers in Africa. In the midst of South Africa's extremely strict lockdown, police seized a consignment of cocaine worth more than $1.8 million. Several of Africa's largest countries imposed travel and economic restrictions in a bid to stop coronavirus, a move that should have also put a damper on the illicit drug trade. Instead, says Heather Merritt, Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for the Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs, the traffickers adapted. For example, in recent months, her bureau has seen an increase in illicit online drug trade in Africa and an increase in local drug labs. She also worries that ailing economies could push desperate people into illegal trade.
Some of the emergency funding measures that governments have enacted to respond to the pandemic, or even new influx of foreign assistance to help respond to the pandemic, can create new opportunities, sadly, for corruption. Over the medium to long term, the socioeconomic disruptions we're seeing may lead to increases in criminal activity as some are pushed out of legitimate work due to economic downturn. And we see that illicit economies may be advantaged when there are prolonged supply chain disruptions. So it may create new black markets for goods.
For years, international drug enforcement agencies have seen this continent as a hub for illegal goods, with ports in Kenya, Nigeria, and Tanzania being used to ship drugs to Europe or the U.S. But increasingly, Merritt says, Africa's own appetite for drugs is growing.
Unfortunately, drug use trends in Africa, drug use is rising. The UN estimated that 6 million people in Africa abuse opioids. This was in the 2020 report. And that about 1.9% of adults in West Africa are substance use disorder. They're suffering from substance use disorder. And in Nigeria, the numbers are even worse. I learned when I was in Nigeria last fall what a terrible problem it is and how the Buhari administration is incredibly concerned about drug use in the Nigerian population.
A staggering 4.7% of adults in Nigeria, she said, are non-medical users of opioids. And so, Merritt said, even as countries try to stop the virus from moving, the traffickers will still find a way to move their product. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, July 22nd. Rights groups in Zimbabwe have condemned the arrest of a prominent investigative journalist and an opposition leader. Zimbabwean police say reporter Hopewell Chigono and the leader of the political group Transform Zimbabwe, Jacob Ngarivume, were stoking violence ahead of a planned July 31st anti-government protest. Their supporters called the arrest a blatant attempt to silence voices against government corruption and abuse of power. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
He wanted to create a session where we could communicate.
That is Detective Inspector Morgan Shafa, who arrested prominent journalist Hopewell Chigono, asking journalists to leave the premises of Chigono's home on Tuesday. Police wanted to confiscate all his equipment, which they say he used to broadcast calls to incite public violence ahead of a planned nationwide protest on July 31st. But Doug Coltart and Beatrice Mutetwa of Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights did not budge.
We would like to see the warrant of, we would like to see the search warrant.
It's okay, we will show you.
Please ask.
A usually jovial Chigono remained mum and subdued as his legal team argued with police. After some time, the police produced the warrant, but the lawyer said it only allowed them to confiscate documents. The police eventually left without taking the equipment. But Chigono remains in police custody one day after he was arrested at his home. Police Monday also arrested Jacob Ngarivume of Transformation Zimbabwe, the political party that called for demonstrations on July 31st. Both men are now facing charges of inciting public violence. Dewa Mavinga, the Southern Africa director at Human Rights Watch, says the two were arrested on spurious allegations.
The Zimbabwe authorities should not be arresting anti-corruption activists. Instead, it should be taking sincere and genuine steps to end corruption. As a result, we therefore call on the Zimbabwe authorities to release Hopewell Chigono and Jacob Ngarivume immediately and drop these politically motivated charges and begin to show that indeed the country is serious about zero tolerance to corruption.
Mavinga says the arrests undermine confidence in Zimbabwe's commitment to the rule of law and human rights.
Calling for protests, peaceful protests, is not a crime. Journalism is not a crime. Section 59 of the Zimbabwe Constitution protects the right of everyone in Zimbabwe to peacefully protest. This must be respected.
But the Zimbabwean police appear not to be listening. The police say Chigono and Ngarivume will be taken to court Wednesday. Tafazwa Mugwadi, the spokesman for the ruling ZANU-PF party, says human rights groups and Western embassies in Zimbabwe calling for the release of Chigono and Ngarivume must be ignored.
Honestly, on what basis and foundation does somebody call for somebody who is calling for insurrection, sedition and treasonous demonstrations on 31 July at a time when the president has pronounced measures to fight COVID-19 and its spreading? Then you say that person must be released. We don't operate that way. Those who wish to be respected by the law must respect the law themselves first. If you abuse them, the consequences are obvious.
President Emmerson Mnangagwa's sympathizers have said on social media that the planned July 31st protests are meant to depose a legitimate government. The government has said it will deploy security forces, including the army, to quell any demonstrations. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
The Egyptian parliament has authorized President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi to deploy Egyptian troops to neighboring Libya should the need arise. Sisi warned the Tripoli-based Government of National Accord, also known as GNA, and its backers in Turkey earlier this month not to cross a red line that Egypt considers vital to its security in the Libyan coastal port town of Sirte. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
The vote in Egypt's parliament for President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi to intervene in Libya did not appear to set off any immediate military activity by rival forces in Libya. Meanwhile, Egyptian media reported that Sisi spoke with U.S. President Donald Trump in a phone call Monday night, which focused on the need for a ceasefire in Libya to prevent further escalation of the ongoing conflict. In a statement following its Monday vote, the Egyptian parliament said it unanimously approved deploying members of the Egyptian armed forces on combat missions outside the country's borders to protect Egyptian national security. Parliament must approve any decision for Egypt to go to war by a two-thirds vote. Libya's eastern-based parliament issued a statement a week ago authorizing Egypt, which supports the interim government of Abdullah Thani in eastern Libya, to intervene militarily if necessary due to what it called Turkey's blatant intervention in Libya and breaching of the country's sovereignty. Egypt's foreign minister, Sama Shoukry, said over the weekend that Cairo is watching the situation in Libya closely. He said Egypt is keeping close tabs on the situation in Libya and will take decisive measures to protect Arab national security. Egyptian MP Imad Gad told Arab media that Parliament's vote to give President Sisi a green light to intervene in Libya does not mean a declaration of war, and that Parliament did not specify when or how the president might intervene. Libyan analyst Aya Burwaila, visiting lecturer at the Hellenic National Defense College, tells VOA that Egypt also is counting on Libyan tribal forces from all parts of the country to play a role in resolving the ongoing conflict. Egypt, she says, understands that Libya's political and social life is organized around tribes whose will and interests should not be circumvented. Meanwhile, the French aircraft carrier Charles de Gaulle recently deployed off of Sirte to monitor any possible advance by Turkish-backed militia forces, according to Arab media. Paris supports Eastern-backed military commander General Khalifa Haftar. In other diplomatic activity, Algerian President Abdelmadjid Tebboune told Algerian TV that his country supports a political solution to the Libya conflict. He says he's been in daily contact with the main players in the Libya crisis, including Russian President Putin, French President Macron, Tunisian President Kais Saied, and with Turkish officials by way of Gulf intermediaries. Tebboune adds that he thinks the conflict must in the end be solved through negotiations. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Malawi wildlife officials have declared victory after a court sentenced 9 members of a Chinese wildlife trafficking gang to a total of 56 years in prison. Members of the Ling Zhen group were found guilty of trafficking protected animal species and parts, including pangolins, rhino horn, and ivory. The alleged kingpin of the syndicate is due to appear in court today, Wednesday. Lamek Masina has the story from Blantyre.
The 9 are part of a 14-member wildlife trafficking gang who Malawian police arrested in May of last year. It includes 2 Malawians and 12 Chinese nationals. Some of the Chinese are already serving 6-year prison terms in the capital, Lilongwe, passing more sentences Monday. Magistrate Florence Segandiana also ordered the Chinese traffickers to be deported immediately after serving their sentences. Defense lawyer Gilbert Konyongwa told VOA Tuesday he could not say anything because he has yet to see the printed copy of the sentence.
With my clients, we need to go through it and appreciate the basis why the court has given such sentences before we make a decision as whether to leave it at that or to appeal.
Brydon Kunchedwa is director of Malawi's National Parks and Wildlife Agency. He told VOA via a messaging app that the sentencing is a victory towards the country's efforts in combating wildlife crimes.
We are looking at a foreign syndicate terrorizing Southern Africa and Malawi included. And now those culprits that have been given 11 years, they are already serving another 6 years, which means they'll be behind bars for 17 years. I'm sure the cartel now is being dismantled of these criminals.
Kunchedwa says the foreign syndicate has been recruiting locals to take part in wildlife trafficking for the past 10 years. The British-based Environmental Investigation Agency, which campaigns against environmental crimes and abuse, welcomed the sentencing. Its executive director, Mary Rice, told VOA via a messaging app that the ruling shows Malawi has demonstrated that it's possible to get rid of such syndicates within one's own borders.
In this particular case, it's been a very long, hard road. The syndicate was very well connected and did try every which way to get away from the rule of law, but there was tenacity and clear leadership, which demonstrates that you can actually identify and prosecute these individuals.
The alleged kingpin of the syndicate, Yong Huan Lin, was arrested in August of last year following a three-month manhunt. He is expected to appear in court to answer charges of possession of rhino horn, conspiracy, and money laundering. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
With 75% of all emerging infectious diseases coming from human to animal transfer, increases in environmental destruction and wildlife crime are directly linked to pandemics such as COVID-19. The United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, UNODC, released its World Wildlife Crime Report this month, highlighting ongoing challenges with this issue. Theodore Leggett is a research expert at UNODC. He tells Reiki Stryak that in West African countries such as Gambia, Senegal, and Guinea-Bissau, the illicit trafficking of trees known as rosewood, which are in high demand for furniture making in foreign countries, remains a massive problem.
We continue to see exports from countries which, as far as we know, have very little or no Pterocarpus arenaceous stocks. One of those is the Gambia, and the Gambia has been one of the leading exporters of rosewood for some time now, but it doesn't really have any rosewood within its borders. And from what we can tell, this wood is being brought across the border illegally from the southern part of Senegal, from the Casamance region. Exports should be labeled as re-exports because there should be an import certificate at the Senegalese-Gambian border, and this doesn't appear to be happening. It looks like a lot of wood is coming off across that border, contrary to both CITES laws and to the national laws. We also know that there was a certification of a large export of so-called stocks from Guinea-Bissau, but it appears that those stocks were included some freshly cut wood as well. And this is often what happens, that when countries want to export wood that's already fallen, so it's not going to affect the environment because it's already dead, the tendency is for traffickers to use as an opportunity to cut fresh wood and pretend as though they were already from existing stocks.
Is the cutting of rosewood specifically illegal altogether in many of these countries, or is it that there are limits to how much can be cut?
Well, this is always a kind of a complicated situation. Each country has its own laws, and oftentimes, in order to be dynamic, the species which are placed on have particular regulations applied to them are determined by the executive.
That was Theodore Leggett, a research expert at the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. You're speaking to Ricky Stryak from Vienna. And that's it for this Wednesday, July 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barty in Washington, hoping that you will have a